But no, I made a very concise show notes this week. There's three things on there. One, hit record. B, put a nickel in Dawn. And three, go grab a coffee. So,
well, let's see if we can hit all three of those.
Yeah, I got my coffee. Let's roll.
All right.
Hello and welcome to episode 129 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubing in Germany, and with me as always is
Adam in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
And with you in Canada is
Don in Barrie, Ontario, Canada.
Don, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Alan?
Excellent. Adam?
Good. Also good.
All good. Oh, and this will just be the feel-good show.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. And we're doing this actually the exact moment of the longest day of the year.
To the minute, just about.
Yeah. Well, just don't say just about. Just say the exact minute.
All right.
There's no Neil deGrasse Tyson isn't listening to the show.
But what if he was?
I would be both flattered and nervous.
This is on its way to being the longest show ever.
That's, well, we have an extra hour today or something. I'm not sure how the summer solstice works, but I think you gain an hour or something like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
A couple of minutes anyhow.
Yeah, exactly. So there's
that. We just wasted them, yeah.
Wasted?
Yeah.
All right, Adam. Glasses half full kind of guy. Amazon, you've heard of it.
Yes.
The rainforest or the website?
Geez, that wasn't made clear to me. Adam?
All right.
I think it's not the rainforest.
I thought they cut the rainforest down to make hamburgers or something. I think I saw Leo DiCaprio talk about that in the 80s. I don't know.
Well, I guess that's McDonald's secret then.
Oh, geez, I didn't name any names, Don. I just said hamburgers. That's it. We're getting sued. We're being sued by McDonald's and Neil deGrasse Tyson.
And I guess I'm to thank.
Well, don't worry. We have insurance. In that we don't. You can buy your things if you click through our site, go right through to Amazon. I did that this week.
Great, me too.
What'd you buy, Adam?
I bought another set of triggers.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I had to. I wanted to buy another set of the Yongnuo triggers. So
are
I
you
did.
Trigger happy?
A little bit. How about you?
I did not buy triggers. I bought a couple things. I bought some new PC sync cables to go with my remotes.
Right.
The ones I have, one of the ones I have is kind of working intermittently. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and see if they have them online. Because if you go to buy them in the store, Don, have you ever had to buy those PC sync to 1/8-inch cables?
Oh, yeah. How terrible is that to do in a store?
It is in a store. are you kidding?
No, I've never had to. I don't use them.
Oh, my. The last time
I could tell by his tone he was playing along.
Yeah, I did. I wasn't sure if he was still on the phone. But, I remember I had to buy some at one time, or almost needed to buy some. And I thought, okay, well, mine hadn't come in from my luggage. That's what it was. And my luggage had gotten lost for a day. I needed them for a job. And I thought, I'll pop in and get these three little cables. And they were like $32 each.
Oh, yeah. It's like buying an HDMI cable.
Yeah. It's
you buy it in the store, it's like $40. You buy it online, it's like $4.
Exactly. Exactly. They just have a decimal place issue in the store. And so I looked online, and they're like €5 or something like that. So I was like, okay, I'll just buy three of them. So I did that, and I also bought chickpeas because chickpeas are awesome.
I always wonder, you know, I worked retail for a number of years, and you could almost figure out what somebody was doing based on what they were buying. You know, like when I'd worked in a pharmacy, it's like, okay, well, this guy's buying pop and chips, you know, right? He's in for a snack. This person's buying, you know, toiletries and shampoo and all that. And I always wonder, you know, if you worked in like a big box store that sold just about everything.
Yeah.
What if somebody comes in and buys like a lawnmower and shampoo
and or some duct tape
and some duct tape? You know, like duct tape, how do these things relate?
Duct tape, old rags. Hey, excuse me, where do you keep your old rags? Yeah. It's over by the ether. That's over there. And the duct tape. Yeah, I always thought about the combinations. Like, yeah, I bought a 1 gallon thing of prune juice and some toilet paper. And then, yeah, and then just stand in line and dance around. Yeah. So, anyways, I bought that on Amazon. That was the whole point of that.
That was a long way to get around to that.
Yeah, you're always saying that.
Yeah, it's true though.
Dawn, how's the book?
The book, the Snowflake book, I assume is the one that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm. We had you on a little while ago in a little quick guest spot, but it's been a while since you've been on the show.
Yeah, so I was crowdfunding a book, my Snowflake book, and I needed to hit a goal, and I blew right past it. So the book is currently in page layout stage. So right now I'm designing all the pages. After that's done, it has to go to a copy editor to make sure that my grammar and sentence structure is proper. Mm-hmm. And then it goes off to scientists to fact check everything. And then it goes to the actual production where it's printed. So it's in production right now, you know, making sure that everything looks good. And it's tough because to make it look interesting and engaging and have the text fit well with the images, it's boring. So I'm kind of committing myself to do a few every day and to just build it up as I go. But it's looking really good, and I'm happy with what I've got so far.
And is there like a projected date?
October. So there's a projected month, per se. I'm not sure. I'm aiming for the beginning of the month, but depending on when I can get slotted in to production, it might be a little bit later.
I think the Christmas decorations go up this week in the mall, so you're going to want to get on that.
I know. I want to be out in time for Christmas, that's for sure. Yeah. And time is disappearing.
Yeah, that sounds great. Look forward to seeing that.
Definitely.
Yeah. I was able, because the amount of money that I was able to raise was higher than I thought. Mm-hmm. I've been able to increase the size of the book, increase the paper quality, and print more copies of it as well. So I'm very happy with I spec'd it out good to begin with. You know, I didn't want to cut any corners, but now I was able to go above and beyond what I thought.
Nice. And that was with Indiegogo you did that with, right?
Indiegogo was the campaign system that I had used, and you know, I always had wondered, you know, they take their cut, and of course PayPal takes their cut, so I don't get 100% of all of the money that's donated. Mm-hmm. And I was worried for a little while about, you know, what kind of value that system is going to give me, other than, you know, like, can I build it myself and just generate my own followers? They put me in their newsletter. They put out a weekly newsletter and feature some of their ongoing campaigns, and they had featured me.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't know why. I just look, and my numbers are going up by like $2,000 in one day, and I'm thinking, what is the source of this? And now Indiegogo put me in their newsletter, and so that was a huge funding source, and I thank them very much for that. And it really becomes a campaign to generate sales after a while when you're trying to do one of those, because I have to try to make, you know, different appearances, and I was you know, showing up to camera clubs and just, you know, promoting the book, and sort of I did a whole circuit of different promotional things, and it was almost like a full-time job just maintaining that campaign for the 2 months that it was active.
You're big time.
Oh yeah.
I got my Vote Dawn t-shirt in the mail last week.
Your Vote Dawn?
Oh good, they're arriving. Good to hear.
Awesome. So you sound a lot like Tom Clancy at this point.
Is that a compliment?
Yeah, that guy moves units.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't even fly first class. I believe he has his own private jet. So that's the goal, man.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever get there, but...
well, that's not a very good attitude.
The Tom Clancy of Snowflake books.
Yeah, there isn't one yet. Maybe he's the Don Komarechka of international intrigue books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's what we'll go with.
So I guess our topic for the day then is going to be books, right?
Later on it will be.
All right.
Do you want to skip ahead?
No, yes. No. I'm giving a little teaser. I'm giving a little teaser. Wrapping it all together here.
Adam. Yeah, are we done? Was that the topic? Can we go? No, this is like the terrible segue, but in non-photo related news, I was gutted by the Gandolfini news this week.
Oh, I know.
That was Adam. You must have heard about that.
Yeah, I did, of course. But the first things I heard about it, like, was a bunch of things that looked like a hoax, and then it's not a hoax. And
no.
But you really have to worry about that, because if the news of something like this breaks on Twitter, then where is your source? You know, everybody's going to call it hoax or true. It's going to spread like wildfire, and nobody knows exactly where the information comes from.
Yeah.
Because it's, passed down by, 3 degrees of separation or so, and all legitimacy is lost at that point.
I was one of the many people, and I'm glad to know I wasn't the only one who was, like, because I normally don't really care. About celebrity deaths in too much. But him, I was like, oh, man. Because I was, like everybody else, I was kind of hoping for a Sopranos movie or something.
Yeah.
You know, that's just me being selfish. The rest of the part about the family, his family and all that I do feel bad, of course. But selfishly, was kind of
I think that. Gandolfini did some of the best scenes that involved, like, just blood-curdling rage, and acted them so well that there was just that pure, like, almost emotion that's really hard to just create out of thin air. But he was able to do it and really bring some life to that character, and in a lot of the roles that he did.
Yeah.
And it kind of sucks that he was just kind of evolving away from his Sopranos roots and started getting a second career, and then it just gets destroyed.
That happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, on more positive news, Adam, we got our first really bad, I guess I wouldn't call it a bad review, but I guess bad review, negative review.
Oh, yes. That means you're famous.
Well, yeah. I don't think it's negative enough for that. Because the guy actually took the time and wrote what he thought was, he considered to be constructive. No, I'm not joking. Like, I'm not even trying to undermine.
So it's not in the realm of YouTube comments.
I kind of disagree with you in that it's kind of, there's a little element of being constructive, but really when you start off calling us twits.
Well, I'm gonna read it.
Yeah, the twit part kind of takes away any constructive credibility.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a little bit at the end there. You're right, but this is
well. Let's give this guy center stage with his insults, hopefully other people follow suit.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I love it.
I enjoyed it very much. So,
but twits must be British. Like, does no Canadian would ever call us twits? They'd call us idiots or morons. But twits to me sounds
or,
British.
Or hosers maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good.
Have you ever been if twits? I don't know. What's the root of that?
No, it is. I only when I have tea. You're right. Tea and biscuits. Yeah, fish and chips. Maybe I'll get that.
Someone can get back to us on who we're being insulted by.
Yeah, and is twit that bad?
No, because it could be awesome.
So here's the comment. I'm going to go ahead and read it. Jason wrote on our blog on the site. Can you guys consider the concept that some of your listeners have jobs or families, meaning our time is limited? and we aren't subscribing to your podcast to listen to your take on the news or your cooking efforts, even though God knows there aren't enough podcasts specializing in those two subjects.
Great.
Now, it was punctuated. He did end that with a question mark, even though the question started much earlier. So I was impressed by that. Consider starting your show. This is where he gets helpful. Consider starting your show about photograph. I'm assuming he means photography.
Right.
Limited to the subject of photography. Maybe even some tips.
Great. That already. I want to listen to that podcast.
As it is, I feel like I'm paying you. with my time spent listening to 20-something-year-old twits reflecting on their lives to get a useful photography tip. I don't know if he I will take those his listening time down to the grocery store and buy my kid some food.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think it works like I'm not sure if he understands the the exchange of money. Anyway, just write to let you know I'm not being paid enough.
So, right. Think of our podcast as one of those treats in the bottom of a cereal box. You know, you got to eat the entire box of cereal to get that tiny little prize at the end.
And we're not grape nuts. I mean, we're like chocolate covered something.
For any and all complaints, I am more than happy, out of my own pocket, to pay everybody a full refund.
Well, the funny thing is immediately the jerk part of me, I just flipped it on like, okay, what are all the zingers I'm going to come back with? And then I didn't, because I thought, well, what am I doing? I didn't even get that far. I didn't even get far enough to think, what am I doing? I just went, all right, well, I'm going to go move on with my life. However, the one thought that Adam and I both had independently, we confirmed later, was, why would you listen to something you don't like?
Yeah.
Don?
Yeah. No, I'm trying to think here. The gears are turning, but I'm not getting anywhere.
Yeah. So the thing is there's a lot of other stuff out there that will give you tips on photography.
Right.
So I would invite anyone to listen to that, those stuff, those things. Read that, listen to that instead, and stop listening to the show. That's my tip.
There will be some diamonds in the rough in this podcast, I'm sure. And if you're not willing to sift through all of the helpful life lessons, then
we Dr. Phil?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no, no, I stand by our show. We're doing the show we want, Don. I'm just saying that if you don't like it, then feel free to not listen. However, here's the rub, is that each week we're going to make a joke at this guy's expense, and it'll be in a different part of the show. So Jason's going to have no choice but to listen to the whole show, hoping to find that little dig that we get in.
That's right.
So careful what you wish for. It's turning into some sort of a Hitchcock torture thing at this point. Yeah. Like, it's like that movie Saw, except now it's listened.
Oh, but P.S. we're not 20 somethings.
That's right. That was the best part. I was like, oh, sweet. All right. We'll look good.
All right.
Don, you're 20 something though, right?
I am. I'm 26.
You're a twit.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take that.
So anyways, that's technically our first negative review, which I didn't think was negative enough to be good. So if someone's got can do better, then fire away, man.
Yes, please.
Yeah. And remember, we're in our 30s. Great. Did you
all
shoot,
right.
Did anybody shoot anything interesting this week?
I did.
Don, you go ahead, Don.
Yeah.
Well, why do I have to go first?
Well, I just hear the guess.
In terms all of right. excitement level of answer of that question, yeah, that was you.
Well, I haven't shot very much. I did a little bit of macro shooting. I've got a water droplet photograph that happens to be in the works. I guess it was still within the last week. We had a nice lightning storm that rolled through, and I got completely drenched and got a good picture out of that.
Okay.
And then there was the photo for the challenge, which I'll save for that.
Can you get a macro shot of a water drop with the lightning striking in the background?
You probably could.
No, can you, I said.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I haven't lined up those variables just yet, but you've given me an idea.
That's
thank
next
you,
level. Next level stuff right there. Yeah, that seems like a lot of effort, though.
It does.
Yeah.
But
I would have just answered no before even thinking about it, Don.
What are you thinking of, Alan? That's not possible at all.
I don't know if that's been done before, and we've got some thunderstorms coming in the next week, so I might have to put that little tip to use.
I would like to see that, and
me
then
too.
And then see you shoehorn that into your snowflake book. Just page 12.
Back cover.
Yeah, wait a second.
Bit of a stretch. I guess molten snowflakes, I suppose.
Could be. Something to think about. That's a silky segue into your next book, Macro Lightning.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be able to get enough content to fill a book on that.
Mm-hmm. Once again, yeah, yes, and yes, I can do that. That's the attitude we're looking for.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Great. Adam, you shoot anything?
Some beach pictures.
Right. Yeah, I saw it. You posted one of them.
I posted one of them, yes. A picture, a family picture from Father's Day, because that's the day we went to the beach.
Where'd you go?
We went to Spanish Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of your favorite spots.
It is one of my favorite spots in Vancouver. Just for the parking challenge alone.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't too bad because we went early. It was a beautiful day, though. So, yeah, parking wasn't an issue that day. Later in the summer, definitely an issue.
Yes. Worth the effort. Nope. But if you're going to Vancouver, definitely go to Spanish Banks in the summer.
And did some off-camera ETTL flash as we were running around the beach. Didn't take too many pictures, but the kids were playing beach ball and eating popsicles and stuff. And then I fired off a few pictures with the T2i and the off-camera flash in ETTL. Just experimenting, and was pretty happy with the results. Midday sun, able to keep the blue skies and the faces well evenly lit. So, yeah, loving the triggers, and that's why I went and bought more, now, which haven't arrived yet, by the way.
Was that a bear flash you shot that with?
With a quarter CTO on it.
No, but no umbrella.
Yeah, no softbox or anything, no.
Yeah, that would have been tough. I mean, first of all, you don't want to run around the beach with that.
Nope.
With your kids, but also it eats so much light that it's going to be tough.
Yes. No, bear flash. And then I did post one picture of the family shot. And I, because of all the sunglasses, it definitely like gave a big blare of a big glare off the sunglasses. So I did Photoshop the glare out, but that was pretty much all I did.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was it. And the other big news I have is my wife was in Portland, where it's tax-free shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sent her out to get me another 430 EX flash.
Wow.
Yeah. Could kind of to go with the triggers. It was kind of, got some gifts, some monetary gifts for Father's Day. I don't know why it works like that, but people decided that like me to give me money for Father's Day.
Right.
Mostly people who are related to me. So I decided, yeah, there's a rebate on the 430 EX flash and no tax in Portland. I think they're selling for $260, which to me, they're giving them away at that price.
Can't believe you didn't buy three of them.
Yeah. So, well, I already have one and now I'll have a second one, and then I can control them all from the camera body, which is what I'm super excited about.
You've come a long way, man.
Yeah. I've got a lot of stuff.
You do have a lot of stuff. You do have the gear acquisition syndrome that they talk about.
Yeah. I do.
You are talking the talk too. I remember some of the first episodes that this would have, like what you're saying right now would have been Chinese to you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 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 This is the 130th week in a row we've done this though, Don.
Yeah, Don. Wow.
All right.
That sounds so like something.
I kind of haven't had much time to breathe. I do physiotherapy and photography.
In that order.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the next PH you're going to be doing?
I don't know.
That's a good question. I can't think of another PH word, or I would have made a joke with it.
Philosophy. Yeah.
Physiology.
Philosophy was way better. That was much funnier.
Yeah.
I'm reading a lot of Sartre. All right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a lead balloon. Yeah, what are you going to do?
So, photo challenge?
No, I went, well, I shot interesting stuff.
Oh,
damn. No, we don't care about that.
Nah, yeah. I don't know how interesting it was. More stuff at the pool because, wow, did the weather go crazy.
Okay.
Remember how I've been whining for about the last 11 months that it's been winter?
Yes.
So it was like 2 degrees like a week ago, and then a couple days ago, 36.
Wow, that's a bit of a change.
Yeah, that's a jump. And I'm not complaining at all because I have a strict policy of never complaining about the heat, no matter how hot it gets for how long, because I like the heat. I do not like the cold rain.
Okay.
So I enjoyed it. It was great, but it was a bit of a jump to go from 2 or 3 degrees to 36. And then everybody agreed and everybody went to the pool on the same day. So it was jammed. Like it was probably a 45-minute and a 1-hour lineup to get in to the pool. So there's that many people.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, but I shot some stuff there, and I thought, hey, you know, I'm gonna put my polarizer on and take some shots there because nice blue skies. And at one point on Father's Day, when we went, I wanted to get a picture of my daughter and myself, so I handed the camera to my wife, got it all set up with a circular polarizer, and my daughter wouldn't sit still. And so now I'm trying to, try to explain to my wife how to slash or focus and then also rotate the polarizer to get the best image. So I didn't bother with that.
Right.
That's tough sledding to get her to understand the whole circular polarizer on the fly like that.
Yes, definitely.
In retrospect, you guys were right. That wasn't interesting.
I have something interesting to throw in.
Great.
Dwayne was in the clinic last week, and he brought this medium format Polaroid camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a new toy that he had acquired, and so he took a picture of me in the clinic. So it's this will mean stuff to you guys. It's a Mamiya. Is that how you pronounce it?
Mamiya, I think.
Mamiya. Okay. Yeah. RZ67, and he had 110mm 2.8 lens on it. And so it kind of, you look down into the camera, like mm-hmm. the viewfinder kind of from the top. And he took a picture of me in the clinic and then handed it to me, like, you know, after it, I guess, took about a minute to develop. And it looks amazing. So, mm-hmm. well, granted, I'm handsome, but the right. photo itself, just done in like, you know, 3 seconds. He had a little light meter and he took a reading, and we went and used window light to light it. And then, so I'm going to scan it in at some point and post it up on Facebook with the picture of the camera. So he emailed me the details of the camera, and he had a picture of it and everything. So I just thought photo geeks like you two would appreciate it.
In terms of buying new equipment, this is a dangerous area you're treading in, Adam.
Oh, I'm not going to buy anything like this. I'm not into it that much. I just thought it was very cool. I'm not going this direction.
You're not into it yet, but as Don will attest, the first time you go out and shoot medium, or especially the first time you shoot large format, that's it. You're hooked.
I have somebody that's possibly looking to sell me an 11x14 large format camera.
Okay.
And I'm enticed by the idea, except that every time I press the shutter button, it's going to cost me about $50.
Is it $50 bucks for a negative?
Well, for the negative and the processing, too, if it's in color.
Do you not do it yourself?
I do the black and white, and I can do the black and white myself, but I don't want to deal with the color chemicals. The organic chemicals are not very kind.
Right. So. Right. No, I only do black and white at home as well, and even that's only 35 mil at this point. I've been there with Chris doing Marquardt doing the color stuff, and it's not really interested yet, but I think I will.
It's not that it's difficult. I mean, it's about the same level of difficulty as the black and white. Temperature is a bit more of a concern,
mm-hmm.
but just the kind of chemicals being used are not the kindest on the lungs and that kind of stuff. So
right.
I'm gonna apologize to the listeners for bringing this up.
No, I'm telling you, Adam. If you go out and shoot with Dwayne with the medium format, you are going to get hooked. If you go to large format, even that's it. You're in trouble.
If you scan one of those negatives, like if he was shooting Polaroid, it sounds, but if it was like an actual negative and you were to scan that on a good scanner, you'd get like 50 megapixels worth of resolution out of medium format.
Mm-hmm.
And large format, you'll get into the hundreds of megapixels, if not gigapixels, depending on the size. So it far surpasses anything that digital can do as far as resolution. You just have to put up with the quirks of using film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was super impressed just at how amazing the Polaroid itself looked.
Yeah. Yeah, when you put the Polaroid back on or just the Polaroid film you can load in there, because that's what we did with the large format. We shot some of the first day. I went on Chris's large format workshop, and the first day we shot Polaroid, and the next day we shot actual negative. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Okay. Again, I apologize to everybody.
Well, the last thing I was going to mention about the interesting stuff, I shot some orange light photos of my wife and my daughter that I posted one on our Facebook. That looks, some people were asking, was it, you know, CTO? But it was 100% available light. And it was just a situation where I went looking. And I didn't really go looking. I just was I just made sure I noticed light when I found it. Some nice light. And said, hey, jump in here. And I think we'll talk about that on another show, Adam.
Great.
Yeah, one when you're not here bringing us down. Okay. Eggs de Foku from last week. We did focal length. What was the ones we did last week? What were our shots? Oh, I did the baseball again, and then you did a likely something of your kids.
I can't remember.
What monkey bars. What
are we? Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes. And so we're about the same on the focal length. I shot 85 mil on a crop on a full frame, and you shot a crop sensor at a 50 mil. So pretty much apples and different kinds of apples. But
and that 110 millimeter of a Mio would probably be about the same field of view.
Is that in the same range?
Yep.
And there you go. So that's a big week for 85 mils.
Great.
This week's photo challenge was the longest day, and that was in honor of today being the longest day and the longest episode and the longest stretch without anything interesting being said. And so let's get right into it. Adam, once again, you get to pick on whose photo gets dissected first.
I say Don's. His is okay. The best.
His is the best. His is the most work, though, just for our listeners.
Definitely, but I liked it. So let's talk about it because I thought it was pretty striking when I looked at it.
Yes, very striking. So, Don, tell us about The Longest Day by Don Gomreczka.
Well, thank you for inspiring me to go out and take the picture, Alan. I had the idea to one of the places where I normally photograph that has a lot of wildflowers. It's a farm, and they grow the seeds. But they've got some nice grounds around. They've got some beautiful apple trees, and one of the things I thought was kind of strange. They've got this weird bicycle lawnmower hybrid, and it. It has the front wheel is replaced with the sort of spinning blades of a hand push lawnmower device. Mm-hmm. And they look like antiques. It's old and rusted, but I thought it would be a great thing to photograph, especially in infrared. And infrared photography is something that I've been playing around with a little bit lately. And so in that light, anything that produces photosynthesis, like grass and leaves, will glow very, very brightly. And I figured, you know, this metal frame of this bicycle thing against some bright glowing leaves and grass would be an interesting composition. So I tried it around in a few different places. And then I decided to move it underneath this apple tree and get a very low angle so that the branches of the tree were above the horizon, to almost like the sky in infrared photographs. If you have a blue sky, will often be very dark, very black.
Okay, so and you don't have to add a polarizer on top.
No. This is just by the nature of what reflects infrared light. And the sky, at least blue sky, doesn't reflect it very well at all, so it gets very dark. And you've got this very surreal look to it. So I tried to get a low enough angle so that the tree was sort of surrounded by this darkness and make it nice and high contrast that way. And then parking the bike underneath in some open space. And the tree had some longer branches leading out on the right-hand side, and I figured, you know, to put a little bit of balance in there, I'd park the bicycle right underneath there to fill in some of that space. And then I waited for the clouds to come in a little bit and fill in the top of the frame.
Nice. And now you have your 5D outfitted for infrared.
Yeah, I decided that I kept my 5D Mark II after I upgraded, and I was thinking for a long time to sell it, and I figured, you know what, let's just get it converted to infrared. So what that involves is I sent it off to a company, Life Pixel is the company, they're based out of Seattle, and so they removed the low-pass filter in front of the sensor and replaced it with a specially designed one. And the low-pass filter is designed to cut out all ultraviolet and infrared light, any light that we can't see from being processed by the sensor. And so that's been removed and replaced with one that only lets infrared light come through. So if I look through the viewfinder, it looks just perfectly normal. But if I take a picture, the picture is made in infrared light.
Mm-hmm.
So it's every picture you're going to shoot on the Canon 5D Mark II is going to look like this or this effect?
Yeah. And so it's dedicated to that purpose now.
Okay.
And so now you're going to make a movie with this effect.
Well, you can. The interesting thing is, for photography and videography, that infrared look can be very pleasing in certain situations. Mm-hmm. Infrared light will pass through the skin a little bit and before it bounces out, and so it creates a very, very soft look. It removes blemishes from skin. Some portrait photographers and wedding photographers will use it for that effect. And I've discovered that if you take a photograph of your camera bag, which is typically black, mm-hmm. in infrared light, it's going to be very, very light in color. And it makes me think, okay, well, they're probably designing these dyes to look black but absorb less heat. So, and the same is true of hair dyes, too. You can see if somebody's dyed their hair by photographing them in infrared, because the hair dye is going to have different reflective properties than visible light. There's all sorts of different things about infrared that that will jump out as you start to play with it.
This is a dangerous tool.
And what did you upgrade to the 5D Mark III?
I upgraded to the 1DX.
Oh, to the 1DX. Okay.
So I love the composition here. The dark sky. It is very interesting. It says this doesn't, obviously the white, everything being white doesn't occur in nature like this. Maybe in the summer, in the winter. Obviously, if it's snow, but it's going to be a very different look. So this really does grab you. And the best part, I think the best part about it is the composition with where the bike is. Something so simple really makes the picture sing.
The other question I have for you, Don, sorry, is can you post-process for this effect?
Oh, well, yes and no. I'll tell you, in this image, the color that you see is entirely fake. It would be, like, if this was just a regular color image out of the camera, it would be all weird shades of red, and some of them, if it was true to the natural world, you wouldn't even be able to perceive because they'd be outside of our own vision. And that's, the nature of infrared photography. So these colors are remapped into our own visual spectrum. And I choose to make a bluish kind of sky because it's somewhat more familiar. If you're post-processing to create this effect, there are some filters that will just take greens and make them white and take, the sky and keep it blue. But it's going to give you weird effects. If you've got, say, a green truck, it's going to become white. It's just taking the colors that are normally associated with an infrared effect and modifying them to look this way. You can take infrared pictures without a modified camera using a filter, but you get really long exposures. You're looking into the minutes of exposures, and the effects are less noticeable, or at least it's harder to deal with.
Adam's buying one.
No, I'm not. But I'm just curious. Like, what was what did the modification cost?
$450, including shipping across the continent and back, because I've got to ship them my camera.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Moving on, Adam. Let's take a look at your photo.
Okay.
Or, but you know what? Let's do mine first because mine does not involve a story.
Oh yeah, mine's definitely involves a story.
Okay, so here's mine. I went for something very positive because to me the longest day of the year is like one of my favorite days of the year. Actually, it is my favorite day. I like sunlight and lots of it. And
better than Christmas and Halloween.
At this age, yes. When I was younger, absolutely not. But I like long days. I like when the sun is up and late into the evening. And so this is my favorite day. So this is my shot of just, I call it two girls at the creek.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are they doing there?
I don't know. Playing just in the water?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't
know
them.
They got their feet in the water, maybe their hands, and they're sort of all looking down towards the water surface. I don't know, maybe there's a fish.
I was going to say bare hand fishing. One of them's just going to yank a trout out of there.
Well, I think they're just enjoying the longest day and the getting out of the heat and just enjoying the nice, cool, I guess we call it a creek. It's I don't know what the actual definition is. It's called the Steinlach. So I guess that's creek or river or whatever it is. They're just enjoying that it runs through Tubingen. And that's what they're doing. They do not know that they're in this picture. So
I like the almost two-tone colors that we have here. Most of the scene is almost painted with a bit of a green color cast. You've got the trees in the background, you've got the rocks in the foreground. They all have a tint of green to them. And then the two girls are a little bit more on the yellow side, and they stand out because of that color difference, and they're wearing a red-maroon kind of color as well. Mm-hmm. So it kind of guides your eye right to them as the focal point just by the color alone.
I wanted to shoot this a little bit later in the evening, but I didn't have the opportunity, so I ended up sort of, I guess, not really cheating a little bit, but I shifted the white balance to make it a little more golden, because mm-hmm. I had this in mind, and but I did wander along the Steinlock looking for a subject that would be lit by the sun without the background not being lit for that.
What
for that
aperture? What aperture did you shoot at, and where did you focus?
I focused on them, I believe, and this was at a f/5.6.
Okay, because I can see the foreground a little bit out of focus, and I was just curious if you had played around with hyperfocal distance at all to try and get the... there's a nice rock in the foreground on the lower right, and I think that adds a nice bit of depth leading into the scene, but it's a bit out of focus to... I kind of look at it, and my eyes kind of want to focus onto it, but there's... Mm-hmm. It's a little blurry.
There was an even bigger rock. I cropped this a little bit because I shot this right out at 200 mils on my 70 to 200. So I couldn't, unless I physically moved forward, I was out of range, out of zoom. And so I kind of had to crop a much larger rock out of it, which I had originally used for composition. I thought, oh, I'm going to get some foreground in here. But wow, was it distracting. So it got out. It got cut out. Adam.
Yes.
You still here?
Yes.
Okay.
I like it though, Alan. Okay. I just want to jump in there, but before Adam decides to add more silence.
No, I didn't know if you're asking for my comments or if you were wanting to move on to the next picture.
Oh, I was just making sure that you're still awake.
No, I'm still here.
Yeah, okay.
Still
here. So, any thoughts?
It's fine. You know, like I like it. It's perfectly fine. I'm not going to make it wallpaper on my computer.
Yeah.
But I don't dislike it.
I've already ordered you a print for your wall. what's the largest one they can ship in the mail? No, the one thing I was going for in the kind of the color tone and the sharpness and all of that is a sort of a movie look. Like I want it to look like a scene from a movie, sort of.
And it feels like it's a story. It's almost like I can almost feel the water moving, and then them just chattering on about something, and that there's some element of connectedness to that. And I find that a lot of my work, I don't typically photograph people, so that connectedness can often be missing. And I find it more difficult to tell a story in a lot of my photographs. And I see a great story being told here in yours.
Well, thanks very much. Take that, Adam.
No, I didn't have anything negative to say.
I know. Let's have a look at your photo, The Longest Day, now, because I think yours has a story involved.
Yeah, yesterday for me literally was the longest day. So this wasn't taken yesterday. I took this today to try to give a snapshot into my life yesterday. But yesterday I got up at 5 a.m., which is normal for a Thursday morning. And my kids, unfortunately, got up at that time, too. Mm-hmm. And they usually don't get up. So I usually get out of the house and before they wake up. But that didn't happen yesterday. So it started bright and early with me trying to get them ready. But anyway, so I get off to work and work my normal work shift, which starts at 7, and then I finished at about 2:30, and I was all excited. I'm done for the week, not working on Friday, and I get out to my car and there's a flat tire and it's pouring rain.
Oh,
so
no.
I get out and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get the wheel off, and again I'm just getting drenched, like it is a downpour. And so I get the tire off, and
well,
then
hang on, so can I ask you, you're a no problem change your own tire kind of guy?
Oh, yeah, I can change the tire, no problem.
Yeah, but I think some of our friends, I wouldn't bet on them
okay.
being able to do that.
Yeah, but here's where I ran into a problem. The spare tire is in the trunk, and this vehicle is like 9 years old. And apparently the wing nut that holds the spare tire into the trunk so it doesn't move around is completely rusted out. So I can't actually get the spare tire out.
Oh, no.
Oh, so I was just like, I mean, I was just trying to pry it. And anyway, so I'm like, I'm 20 minutes. I'm trying to fiddle around in the trunk, trying to get this thing out. And I'm losing it because I just want to get home. Right. And
is there a photo tip in here? Because Jason wants to know.
Yeah. So anyway, so I finally I go back into my clinic because I'm still like in the parking lot there, and I find one of the ladies says, "Oh, try a plier." So I get pliers, and I'm able to finally pry out the tire. So I get the tire on, and I head down to the tire shop, and I think, okay, the day's turning around. It's about an hour and a half after I finished work, and so now I know I'm gonna be hitting some traffic going home because it's just the timing of going back into Vancouver. So anyway, so I get the tire on, dealt with relatively quickly, have to get a new tire because it was punctured beyond repair. So I head back and I'm thinking, okay, I'm about an hour from home. So it's 4 o'clock now, should be home at 5. So I get on the highway, I'm driving home, and then traffic just stops. And not like, you know, stops, like slows down, like literally stops.
On the highway,
yeah. And there was, I guess, like a three-vehicle accident. Mm-hmm. And because it was of where it was near the tunnel going into Vancouver, like, it literally, you shut your engine off, and it was at least 45 minutes where we didn't move at all. Like, everyone turned their cars off. So I left Langley from the tire shop at 4. Grant, again, remember, I finished work at 2:30, and I didn't get through the tunnel until 6:40.
Oh, no.
So it was a 3-hour commute home when
you
normally
could have driven to Seattle in that time.
Oh God. Oh, it was just awful. And I was just stuck there not knowing if I was ever going to move. And so that's the longest commute of my life. So I left the house at 6:15 and I got home at 7:15, I think, is the time I went through the door.
See, the irony is if you had a 3-hour drive ahead of you.
Yeah.
You just made that 3-hour drive, that'd be fine. If you have a 20-minute drive and it takes 3 hours, somehow psychologically it just kicks the crap out of you.
Oh, yeah. You know, it was just one of those things. You just want to be home, but there's nothing you can do. And so I wish I had a camera. I would have stepped out of my car. I'd be taking pictures of the traffic. I would have loved to have taken a picture of my actual dead tire. But again, I wasn't willing to laugh at myself at that point. I was just so bitter at the world. And I kept coming back to the irony. I'm like, longest day. This is it. This is right here. This is it. And so I had initially, before this day happened, thought of like taking a picture of something with the kids where I kind of pretended to feel like this was a long day and they're jumping around like monkeys.
Uh-huh.
And quickly it turned into, no, I have to reenact what happened. So here I just did this out front of my house. And the tire is not actually flat there, mm-hmm. but I got the tire out. And this is I tried to recreate my feeling, my mood of just absolute despair yesterday.
It's funny to me that you went to the negative thing. My thing was positive because, oh, wow, the longest day. We get so much day. And then you have a bad experience, but which makes complete sense in this photo.
Yeah.
I like this photo. To me, this says a lot. Besides the obvious storytelling part, this says a lot about summer. Like the way the lighting, the white wall, the choice of black and white was good.
Okay.
Composition, everything's good. The way you use part of the car, not all the car, and it kind of gives that sort of washed out, burned out, hard light feeling of summer.
Yeah, it was about 10:30 in the morning, and the sun had just come through the clouds. It was just blaring.
Yeah, love it.
So, thank you, Don.
Well, you didn't park the car exactly straight. I'm noticing that.
I was trying to make the tire given an angle where it might not look fully inflated. I couldn't exactly accomplish it, but that's kind of the reason that turned the tires and changed the angle a bit. I was trying to hide it, and that's with the jack too. I was trying to hide the bottom of the tire, but yeah.
But you don't have a compressor, right? So you didn't really want to let the air out.
I wasn't dealing with that all over again. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you lose points on realism then as well.
Okay. Even your reflection's good in the cars.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like the reflections. And I like it's not just him, but it's the wall and some of the lines that get reflected in the side of the car. Yeah. I like the, like you said, Alan, the look of despair, and there is a story to be told here. Even just the fact that your foot is like bent over as if you're ready for action, but you just don't want to do anything. like it's just despair, sorrow on a hot summer day. And the black and white treatment, I think, really focuses the eye onto the expressions in the image instead of getting lost in some colors that don't really matter.
The one question I do have, non-photo related, is if your the spare was basically rusted into your car,
yeah,
was there air in it?
Oh, the tire was fine. It was literally the wing nut that goes
right.
Through
I understand,
the tire. Yeah.
But you're supposed to check, you know, the tire pressure in the spare every once in a while, which nobody does, and
right.
then you end up you get it out there and go, oh, good, that one's flat too. That's very very common.
Yeah.
So do you ever check the tire pressure?
Oh, God, no. No.
You got – no. I mean, I know this is your longest day, but you got tremendously lucky here.
No, and the same with the tire getting fixed. The tire got fixed incredibly quick once I actually got the tire out and got it to yeah. the tire store. And I thought things turned around, but then I got slapped in the face.
I was coming back from a ball game last Saturday, and we played basically right on the border of France. So it's a long trip. But coming back on the Autobahn, and there was an accident that slowed everybody down, and we got to the front, and there was the trunk of a Corvette in Germany, believe it or not, but there was the trunk of a Corvette there. That was it. The rest of the car was no longer existed.
Right.
So for us, it was like, hey, great, at least we weren't in that crash. But so that's why I always try to, whenever I get stuck in traffic like that, I try to remember that it could be worse. You could be the guy in the accident.
Yeah. And you know what my first thought was when I went by? And again, I could see the vehicles pulled off to the side and the people that were in the accident, like standing outside their cars, I guess, making phone calls to various parties. And the first thought that went through my head, and again, this is just, you know, the kind of day I was having and the selfishness it's almost funny, is that it's like, oh, great, you had to go and get in an accident.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks a lot for getting in an accident.
Thanks for
making your day worse.
I had a flat tire.
Yeah. That's the huge. And then after that, I slapped myself in the face.
Was it serious accident or no? Like everybody.
It didn't look like it. It looked like, again, I didn't hear afterwards, but again, it looked like the parties were okay, but it did look like a few hoods were bent in pretty nicely. So
that's always my thought process when I wait in long traffic for the accident. I get up there and I'm like, I better see at least two school buses on fire. No kids in it. Like everyone has to got out safely.
Right.
But the carnage, like there has to be some Godzilla.
It has to be spectacular.
Yeah, there has to be a reason why I was waiting here. And
yes.
and with this with the Corvette one, it was. I mean, I'm not sure what happened to the guy, but apparently that this highway that I was on is a very popular for guys from Switzerland who have non-street legal cars to come and race because
right.
there's no speed limit.
Right.
So they were likely doing. By the look of his car, he was going well over 200 kilometers an hour when he hit the underpass, the cement wall.
Right.
So, you know, I didn't feel that bad for him. But anyways, it got my money's worth. So now I feel bad. Am I a monster? No.
Yeah, no, you are.
No, it's you. Come on. Okay, Exifoku for these photos. I shot mine on a full frame, ISO 200, focal length of 200 mils, f-stop 5.6. What's the shutter speed? Adam shot his on a crop sensor, also ISO 200, focal length 30 millimeters, f-stop 7.1. And what's the shutter speed on Adam's? That's what we're looking for this week.
Okay.
And also, I should remind everybody that mine was cropped, so it's 200 millimeters, but it is cropped somewhat.
Yeah, mine was cropped as well. Okay. So
shouldn't affect your guess on the shutter speed, though.
No,
that should be fine. So there's that. This week,
we're still doing an episode.
Oh no, this is where Dawn takes over.
Okay, all right.
All right, this week's topic, books. How to make books.
Okay.
In general, and now, Adam, have you ever made like what are the different kinds of books you like? You can do them right through iPhoto if you want through it with Apple.
Yeah, we've done that. Yeah,
you've done that, right?
Yep, I've done that.
And how's your experience on that? Quickly,
it's pretty easy.
Yeah, it is good.
And the quality, I think the quality seems to be nice from Apple. We've done Apple, and my wife in the last couple of years has been making books for the kids, like A Year in Sarah, and she does those through Shutterfly.
Okay, there we go. So that's what we're going to get into, because for me, I happen to like, for our yearly, you know, photo albums that we make for our daughter, we like to get them prints made and actually glue them into a photo album, like the black background, the black pages.
Yeah,
so we can then write on them. I don't know why, it's just specifically for that. Other stuff, I like making books. I've looked at it a couple times, but for this, there's something about it that I just happen to like. Get the pictures printed with the white borders on them, and then my wife handwrites on some of the photos, you know, hey, this is what happened, or you know, so she'll look back in many years. However, but that's very, very, very difficult to do. A lot of time involved in that.
And I would assume that most of the images that you would be printing for that book would be in a standard size, like a 4x6 or a 5x7 or something that you would readily just go and get printed somewhere, right?
There you go. That's a great point. They are all 4x6. I just do 4x6, and not every picture I take is a 4x6.
Exactly.
That's the rub. But since Dawn has just gone through the whole process of making a professional book, we wanted to have him on here and tell us all about books in general. So, Dawn, where can somebody start if they want to just make books at their home, like make a one-off?
Well, there's a lot of services out there that will allow you to print one copy of a book, whether it's a gift for your family or friends, or maybe you had a family reunion or something of that nature. You went on a trip and you come back and you got all of your images and you want to put them together in a book. I've used Blurb in the past. And as you mentioned, there's Apple and Shutterfly, and I'm sure there's tons and tons of others. It's done in a way that probably couldn't have been done, say, 5-6 years ago, nearly to the same level of quality. They've really improved what you can get from a one-off book. And these are not, like, if you can imagine a book that would have had to have been produced decades ago, it would have been offset printed, and you would have a lot of expense doing the whole setup, and it wouldn't have been worthwhile doing if the print run was less than 1,000. Mm-hmm. And so now you can print one. We're not talking 1,000, we're not talking 100. You could just get one or two copies of a book. They're using, some people will use inkjet or laserjet prints to make the pages, and it's an automated system for these guys now. And the quality is actually pretty good, and it's getting better. I've used Blurb in the past. My very first book was published just as a Blurb book, chronicling my first few years of adventure in photography. And the issue is that it is pretty expensive per copy. You might be looking, if you want 80 or 100 pages, you'll be paying about $50. But if it's a gift and you're not looking to make money on it, and it's just a keepsake or a memento, then it's definitely worth every penny. But if you're trying to use it as a promotional tool or to sell, then there's not enough profit in that model for you to make it worthwhile.
Right. Now, so let's say you're gonna make a book. What are the sort of steps that you go through when you just a one off? You want to make a keepsake for somebody. What are we looking at here? First of all, I mean, you can do it in Aperture or iPhoto. You can go right through Apple.
Or right in Lightroom. Lightroom has a book module as well. Okay. So a lot of those tools will allow you, right where you keep your pictures, to organize the book. And there's some great software. I'm actually producing a book through Blurb right now with a bunch of my Yukon images, just to give to the hunters that had taken me on that trip into the wilderness. So it's, I might print 10 copies of it. It's just for them. And I'm using Lightroom to put it together. And I'm really happy with how easy it is to design it. They've got a bunch bunch of different page layouts. I've done all the page layouts, and now I'm going in and adding text, and then I design the cover at the end. And right from the software, you order it, and you go right through. These companies will also offer typically a designing software program of their own. Mm-hmm. And some of them will also allow you to design the book in Adobe InDesign or similar layout programs and then just upload a PDF file at the end of it. So there's a lot of different ways to create the book. But, you know, by far the easiest way to do it is through Aperture or iPhoto or Lightroom these days.
Right. There's a lot of another just to add more options into the fire. I mean, a lot of your local sort of London Drugs photo places, or here in Germany, a place called Photomarkt, or even the drugstores,
yeah,
offer printing services, and you can go download their software, their specific software, and get it done for like very, very reasonably priced. So there's a lot of local options that you don't have to mail out to.
And I, when I had worked at Black's, during the time that I was there, Black's is a photography store here in Canada, and they had little kiosks that you'd normally order your prints from, and they introduced books. You could sit down, order a book right from the kiosk, mm-hmm. and away you go. It'll be – they didn't make them in-house. They'd be shipped in,
right.
But it would take a couple of days, and you'd get your book.
And one of the things I like that impresses me the most is the – basically the – right to the edge printing.
Yeah, so and a lot of these they'll do what's called full bleed printing, where they actually print a little bit beyond the edges of the page, and then they cut off the pages so that the image hits the very, very edge of the of the page itself. And this, it looks so beautiful. It really fills in the image, and I think that there is something to be said for having a print or a book. You know, it's a different experience than looking at it on a computer monitor. And when you're seeing it edge to edge with nothing but the image, that's just beautiful. And there's some ways to print too, if you're printing on acrylic and other things that have just edge to edge printing with nothing else. I love that effect, and you can do that in a lot of photo books.
So Adam, who makes the books in your house? Like, who designs them? You or your wife?
My wife.
Okay, but you give her all the photos, and then she goes from there.
Yeah, and she usually, because part of it is that's kind of just become her thing, but also she remembers the little details so well that she always adds, like you say, Lena writes on the photo. She just does that for the books.
Right. Which, yeah, you can usually type right in on the template.
Yes, and exactly. She does allow me to have some creative control as far as the layouts go, and so she'll usually put something together and then let me proof the photo part of it.
So aside from the birthdays, that's two a year. Do you do any other books in the year?
We have done in the past if there is a special event or something, mm-hmm. but usually it's like one kid gets their whole year of Sarah, year of Jack. So we take the best pictures, and usually it's like a 50-page book for each kid.
Okay, so that you do two a year roughly.
Yes.
I'm trying to get a feel of how much time this takes, like start to finish. Not counting taking the photos, but selecting the photos.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's at least it spends a lot of time.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I could get her to estimate, and she's she's not here right now.
Right.
So, yeah.
But you typically don't start a week before the birthday.
No.
Okay. No. So give some lead time. Okay, I should write that down, because I'm always a start late kind of guy.
Well, I did all the for the book that I'm doing for the Yukon images. I did all the page layouts today. It took me about 2 or 3 hours, and it ended up being about 100 pages or so. And I included the text space that I know I wanted to write the stories for on various images.
Mm-hmm.
And I got maybe about a quarter of the way through writing the text in one day, being distracted in many ways from what I was supposed to be doing the whole day. And I was supposed to spend the whole day doing this book and getting it done from beginning to end. And if I had the whole day, I probably could have done it.
Right.
But that didn't work out, so I'm not quite finished. But if you had the full day and you could just close out all distractions, you could probably get it done.
So when you're doing a book with Blurb, do you download their software? Do you use one of their templates, or because they, a lot of them come with ones that you basically just plug the photos in, and they have different sort of designs on each page that is just the same for everybody.
Right. I I'm using Lightroom as the tool to create the book. And they have a bunch of different page layouts with images in different areas. You can choose to have one image on a page, up to four images with different layouts, and then multiple, like grid array type stuff with a lot of different images. And so you can pick and choose how you want it to flow, and the software is pretty powerful. You've got hundreds of different page layouts to choose from. You can't create your own, per se. If you want to be very, very particular about your own layouts, then you have to go for a heavy hitter software like Adobe InDesign or something where you're taking full control.
Okay.
And then you're right that Blurb does have their own software where you can have all the fancy backgrounds with like the vines and leaves that are surrounding the pictures and the creative framing and that kind of stuff for weddings or birthdays or what have you, that have all the background images that fill things in. And I'm not too keen on that, right. But some people are, and more power to you if that's what you want. But so I designed the book and I chose all the different page layouts. And the interesting thing is, and we mentioned that at the beginning, is that almost all of my images are not in a standard 4x6 size. Mm-hmm. So I can choose to have square images or very long rectangle and sort of panorama images, and I can choose to fit them on the layouts that will work best for that photograph and then scale them and maybe crop them in the book module itself, mm-hmm. to give the best feel for that particular page and to tell that story in the best way. Almost none of them, I'm going to say 95% of those pages are not 4x6. So I'm able to be very creative with the way that I crop and the way that I compose my images, even in post when I'm cropping things. And the book will maintain that creativity.
It's nice to have that flexibility. I miss that from doing my own sort of photo albums like I mentioned I did. That is definitely a big one. The other issue I have found with the couple times that I've done books is that I've even done one at like the local photo place here, just because someone gave me a gift certificate one time for the photo place, and I had nothing I wanted to buy from them, so I thought, oh, okay, I'll get a book made.
Well, you didn't want to buy that $40 cable or whatever it was.
Exactly. I didn't need it then, and I don't know if they even have them at this one, but so I got a book made, and I was pleasantly surprised by the quality. The one negative was there was one or two pictures, maybe three, that just they must have auto-corrected the levels and didn't do a good job of it.
Yes.
So when it comes to proofing, the images that I thought looked good when I had them printed elsewhere or on my monitor came out a little bit muddy. How do you go about confidently proofing before you get printed?
This is a hard thing to do because you don't know what's going to happen. Let's take a look at the majority of people out there that don't really care about their images. Let's say you've got somebody that's putting together, maybe they went skiing in the Swiss Alps or wherever, mm-hmm. and all of their skiing photos come back gray because their camera was not compensating for the exposure properly. It was making everything too dark because they thought it was overexposed, and all their skiing pictures are gray. Well, if they were to print a book with all of those images, then all the photographs would look bad, even though they might look okay on the back of their camera because they, you know, the way that it translates emissive versus reflective. If you print that image, it's going to noticeably be gray, and all of your photos will look bad. So catering to the lowest common denominator of photographers, a lot of these services will auto-correct your images in some way. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to avoid that. I'm assuming that if you're using Aperture or Lightroom or any of these tools designed for photographers that are, you know, if you're color calibrated and you're taking very specific care of your images and how they're processed, they're not going to do it. And I haven't seen anybody that had their images processed or, you know, beyond their control from any of those programs. But if you're using the built-in ones at a kiosk somewhere or from the basic software that these companies will provide, they're probably going to auto-correct it. And the same thing happened to me, Alan, with a calendar that I had produced for a couple of family members 2 years ago now. And I just put some of my favorite images in there. And I remember some of them just came back so wrong because they auto-corrected every page. And I remember my Maple Leaf flag image, which is one of my favorite shots, has a bunch of maple leaves on a bed of white snow. And I guess their autocorrect software decided that that was wrong because the white area was too overexposed to its liking and darkened down everything so that the leaves looked black.
Right.
And it looked so bad. Like, it wasn't just a little bit nudge here and there to put things in perspective. I had to return it and just basically cancel the whole order because I knew if I ordered it again, the same thing would happen, and I went somewhere else. And it sucks when that happens, but expect it. You know, expect your images. If you're using some automated system that you're not familiar with, they're going to take some control away from your images and adjust your exposure or your color in some way because they think they're helping you.
Right. And they probably are helping most people.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's why they do it.
Right. I've had that situation where I've taken prints down and needed to get reprints done from a negative, and I've taken the original print and said, make it look like this.
Because, oh, especially if you're doing it from a negative, because they're always going to be doing their own level of color correction and color cast removal to some degree. And every time they do it, it will be different.
Yeah.
And so if you don't bring a reference point for them, then you're guaranteed that it will be different.
I learned that the hard way. And after that, I always kept one print. It's one of my favorite prints or photos that I've taken. I've had printed many times. And after the first time it came back where they really cranked the contrast, I said, okay, that's it. Here's the reference point. Always do this. So that's it. So with the book, I mean, let's say your screen isn't calibrated. Is there any way to really tell that you're going to be in the ballpark?
Even if your screen is calibrated, you still might be wrong because, again, a screen that is offering light emitted from it is going to be different than a page that is going to have light reflected off of it.
Right.
And so even that one difference alone, in the best calibrated environment, you might see some differences. So if you're not calibrated and your images look good online, they look good to everybody else, you're probably okay. I mean, color calibration is more about the colors per se, and most of the automatic corrections that these companies do are based primarily on density.
Right.
So brightening or darkening your image and applying a contrast curve to it in many cases. Now, what I often find is that people, if they have an image that looks good on their computer screen and then they print it themselves on their own printer, if it doesn't look right, it won't look right from any other printer. At least it will look different, you know, because there's going to be some change. Oftentimes, people will have their computer monitor too bright.
Right.
And if their monitor is too bright and their image looks perfect on that, as soon as they go to print it, their print will be too dark. Not because the printer's doing something wrong, but because the monitor is lying to you and saying that it's too bright.
Okay.
So simply having your monitor at the right brightness. In fact, bring the brightness all the way down on your monitor, and you'll probably have better results from a book that you're trying to make.
There's the takeaway, Jason. You had to sift through a lot of flat tires to get to it, but that's the big one. That's the big one. Turn your monitor down and check it that way. And I think that's a great tip because that's what I end up getting. That's the three images I was talking about were too dark. And probably for that reason, they look great on my monitor, and then boom. And I think they're black and white as well. I think those are the ones, they're all three were black and white, in the rest were color. So that might have been an issue.
There you go.
Anything else problem you solved. Want to know about books, Adam?
I think I'm good.
I could have asked you pretty much anything there, and it would have been. Yeah, I'm gonna hang up then.
Well, can I share a little more then?
Do it.
All right. I'll ramble. In the book that I'm producing, when you're going above and beyond the basic, blurb or other company, then you can get into the offset printed world. And then you have tons of different options. You can choose to have a different paper quality, just as if you're printing on fine art paper, and you can choose a different company, a different paper quality, a different thickness. A lot of those options become available to you. And in the last few years, Blurb has actually been offering higher end papers that will, you know, offer a greater thickness, a better tactile feeling to them.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, you can get like professionally made wedding albums that have really thick pages that are almost like they're, I'm going to say, like the thickness of cardboard, but of course much fancier than that, but they're very thick,
mm-hmm.
Almost like a baby book, you know, where the pages are made to be indestructible.
Right.
And so those options are available when you are printing a book in any form these days. So keep in mind what your end goal is going to be. Is it going to be a book that's designed to have very few images that are going to last forever? Or if it's just going to be a yearly or a bi-yearly thing where you're just going to have the collection of all photographs of a single person, and how much quality, how many times is that going to be opened up by friends and family? And are they going to care about that?
And I recommend paying close attention to the paper quality as well. I've had a book done before. Those were the options. I had one done with kind of, you know, meh quality, and I've had one done with the thick cardboard. And it's a difference maker.
Oh, it's night and day, depending on what you're after. You know, if you're trying to like cram 500 pages into a book and to keep it cheap and just to get those pictures printed and to have almost like an archive of them, then you know what? It might be cost prohibitive to have the nicer pages. But if you're making a work of art or you're printing a portfolio, or you know, it's going to be a storytelling piece of some kind and it's going to be opened up many times, then by all means, I recommend spending a little bit more on the paper quality, because that will make all the difference in the world.
And if it's not going to be opened up many times, maybe don't make that book.
Yeah, well, there you go.
There you go. So that's it. Pay attention to paper quality. Very good. That's a great takeaway. So
great tip.
That's it for books. If people have questions, they can fire them off and we'll try to get to them. But photo challenge for next week, Adam.
Yes.
It's found light.
Okay, you're getting more and more abstract every week.
No, this one's fairly straightforward. The subject matter is going to be up to you, but this is going to be basically no flash involved. That's first off.
Okay.
This is tied in with the sort of orange light photos I took of my wife and daughter that we hinted at and I posted already online. Something like that, where that light was 100% available light that I just happened to stumble across.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to talk about next week, I think.
Great.
Is the plan. And so let's do a photo challenge about that found light. And it should be interesting, too.
Okay. Interesting found light.
Well, that's up to you. I mean, you can make it boring if you like. But
And then you lose.
Right. For the 130 weeks in a row. So that's it. Check us out on Amazon. Go to our website and click through and buy.
Nobody's still listening, so you don't even have to bother.
Yeah, even my wife's not listening. That's the joke. I told my wife about the negative review we had, and she's like, "I don't listen to your show either." So, fair enough. Anyways, websites. Dawn, where can people find your portfolio?
Well, my website for my portfolio, anyhow, is doncom.ca. Mm-hmm. And if I have any workshops going on, they'll be listed on that website as well.
Do you have any workshops going on?
Yeah, well, I just started teaching a nature and landscape photography course right now. And that's going on at Georgian College here in Barrie. And I run those a few times a year. I'm just in the process of, and I'll announce it here, but it might not be online for anybody to find just yet. I'll be teaching a nature course through the Niagara School of Imaging this summer. And that's from August 18th to the 22nd. And just finished confirming everything earlier this afternoon. So I'm happy to mention that. And it'll be online in a couple of days. And possibly by this fall, I'll have some more interesting announcements abroad to mention too. So
abroad.
I'm abroad.
You mean abroad like in Europe?
No.
Oh.
No. International, but
probably. He means like Windsor.
Okay. Give us a hint. What do you mean by abroad?
Well, I might be back in California to do another workshop down there. So
is that abroad, Adam?
Kind of, yeah.
Abroad? Oh, I always thought it was when you go over the ocean, hop the pond, as it were.
Right.
Okay. So,
well, if you want to invite me over to do a workshop over there, Alan, I'm more than happy to do so.
Yeah, that's right in Marquardt's backyard. You have to talk to him.
Yeah.
You work it out.
No, I wouldn't want to step on any toes.
You got to work it out with him. And no, California sounds great.
Everybody I taught a macro photography workshop earlier this year in Santa Barbara, California, and it was very well received. I had a great time there, and going to do something a little bit more creative later in the year, but it's all up in the air right now.
Well, we'll have you back and make sure you promote it. So doncom.ca. Adam, Where can people find all your beach Father's Day photographs and whatnot?
Our Facebook, Two Hosers, our Facebook webpage.
Yeah.
And also occasionally on schwartzchronicles.com.
Once a month at the most.
Yeah, that's the way it is. But school is almost over, which means my wife will be off for the summer. So probably the post will come fast and furious in the summertime.
We can all look forward to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
How about your stuff?
Oh, thanks for the segue, the lead-in. Check me out at alanattridge.com, but the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find everything you want to know, like the aforementioned Amazon link or Facebook, like Adam just said.
And are you guys very active on Google Plus?
No. We do have a Google Plus. I'm not that good at it. How do I get at it? That's a whole nother episode.
Yeah, we can talk about that. I found myself with as we're recording this, I have 610,000 followers on Google Plus, and I'm pretty active there. So that's a growing market for photographers, and it's very active in the photography community. So.
We'll talk about that off air one time, because I would like to get on that. I don't think I'm doing it right, or people just don't like us, and that's highly possible.
Yeah, I wish they'd write more negative reviews.
Well, I had that one printed, and it's
get that framed.
It's on my fridge.
I'm pretty sure after this episode, we're going to get a few more.
I would hope so. Even if they're phony, I don't care. Yeah. Just be specific. Remember, we're in our 30s. That's all. That was the part that stung. So there's that. So check us out on those websites. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.